What's eating what? The contagion of the Made in China coronavirus pandemic is eating us, the worldwide us. And that leads us to ask, how can we avoid the contagion?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1225th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Kowloon who are tuned into the Food Chain podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, I once had a job on a survey crew building a road through the badlands of eastern Montana. The crew's winter job was to set the roadbed's grade so that when spring came and the ground thawed out, the heavy equipment operators would know how much to build up or take down the roadbed. To set the grade, we placed a heavy iron pin on top of the frozen roadbed and then pounded it into the ground with a 16-pound sledgehammer to the extent needed to place the wooden grade stake. It was hard work, and it was cold work. In fact, we did not have to swing the sledge when the temperature hit minus 20. Still, it seemed like the temperature was often minus 18 with a 20-knot wind. When such was the case, there would be much grumbling and groaning about the cold from the crew. But when we did get to grumbling about the cold, one of the senior members of the crew, Merritt Chamberlain, would deny the cold, telling us with a warm, knowing smile, "Cold is when your spit freezes before it hits the ground." How could he deny such an elemental fact, one so obvious it turned the rest of the crew blue? But he did, and he never seemed to be cold, and never complained about the cold. So I got to testing his theory on a number of very cold occasions. Lo and behold, he was right. The spit never did freeze before it hit the ground. Oh, it would crackle a bit as it flew through the air, but it never did freeze. After working with this theory through the winter, I came to believe that he was really right. It never did get cold. I now live in Banana Slug, California, where the temperature is always just right. Whenever I hear someone complain about the cold out here, and I do hear them complain, I always tell them, "Cold is when your spit freezes before it hits the ground." Of course, they think me crazy for denying the obvious, but we are now living with another obvious adversity, a super contagious virus that sprang to life in Wuhan, China, from whence it was set free to eat up the people of the world. This plainly obvious adversity leads me to ask, how can we avoid that contagion? Well, here to help us find an answer, we have Mary Alice Rose, who is a scientist and a lecturer. Mary Alice, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you very much, Michael. I'm happy to be here.
Well, good. Mary Alice joined us today by virtue of some fortuitous serendipity. I attended a lecture she presented recently on the science of Christian Science, during which I learned that she is both a scientist and a Christian scientist. At the lecture, I was handed a folded piece of paper, which I later opened, and it was titled Contagion by Mary Baker Eddy. In four short paragraphs, Mrs. Eddy describes how one can, in fact, avoid contagion. I asked Mary Alice if she would be so kind as to lead us through Mrs. Eddy's four paragraphs so that we might understand how we can avoid something as obvious as the contagion. And she said yes. So, Mary Alice Rose, welcome to the Food Chain. Which came first, Christian Scientist or a scientist? Which was first?
Well, I am a lifelong Christian Scientist, so I guess in my experience you could say it came first. My father was raised in Christian Science. My mother came into Christian Science in her teens. And so that's all I ever knew until I went to public school, and then eventually I started learning about the scientific method in my science classes. Now, it was interesting to me because all of the words that are involved in the scientific method of research were terms that I had already learned in my study of Christian Science. Words like doing research, asking questions, forming a hypothesis, testing through experimentation, analyzing results, publishing the results. I mean, these were so familiar to me because of my study of Christian Science, and it's probably useful here just to give a little 50-word or less description of what Christian Science
please,
is.
Please do.
Christian Science is a system of study, a system of healing, a religion, a denomination that was founded in the late 1800s by a woman, the woman you just referenced, Mary Baker Eddy. And she grew up in New England in the United States, and she was from the Congregational faith. She and her family loved the Bible, and she was a deep student of the Bible all her life. She also was rather frail and sickly as a child, and so she set out on a journey when her own prayers and the prayers of her parents and the church failed to heal her. She set out on a journey to find out where true healing comes from. So this was the question that she asked in the beginning of this scientific method that she was applying in her own life.
And, which is to say, something to investigate.
Exactly. And so she started doing research, and she continued to be a devoted student of the Bible. Along with that, she also was seeking help through conventional Western medical treatment. She was seeking help in other things like homeopathy and hydropathy. And she still found that she wasn't finding healing, and she just kept wondering about those stories in the Bible in which people were healed through prayer alone. So she persevered, and along the way, she had some really interesting experiences. For example, when she was studying homeopathy, there was a woman that came to her and asked Mary Baker Eddy for treatment in homeopathy, and this woman had been diagnosed with dropsy, or an abnormal retention of fluid. And Mrs. Eddy realized that she'd prescribed for this woman the same medication that the previous homeopath had prescribed, and so she started to become concerned that a prolonged use of the drug would have an adverse effect on this patient. But the patient was feeling that she was being helped by the drug, so she didn't want to give it up, understandably. But Mrs. Eddy, out of concern for her patient, decided to try giving the woman unmedicated doses, but to watch her very carefully.
A placebo.
Yeah, that's probably what we would call it today. And the woman continued to improve. At some point, the woman said she would try to give up the drug, but then on the third day, she relapsed and said she couldn't get along without it, so Mrs. Eddy started giving her this placebo again, and the woman started to improve again, and ultimately, she completely recovered under that regimen. So this case and others like it that she observed, read about, just convinced her that it was not the drug. In that case, it was the woman's faith in the drug that had cured her. And this just was something that Mrs. Eddy continued to ponder. And then in 1866, she had another experience which convinced her of the power of thought and, furthermore, the power of God to heal. And so it was, as I say, in 1866, and she was walking on the icy streets of Lynn, Massachusetts, when she slipped and fell. It was deemed to be a serious case. She was moved to a nearby home, and then the next day to her own home, and a doctor tended to her for a few days. There was no improvement. She was diagnosed as having suffered severe internal injuries, and the doctor said there was nothing more that he could do. While her friends were in the next room, expecting her not to recover and to die, she asked for her Bible. So someone brought her a Bible, and then she was reading an account of Jesus healing someone. And while she was reading, she gained what we might say was a deep insight into the nature and reality of being, her very being as a child of God. And it was so compelling to her that she found herself well. She got up from the bed, she got dressed, and walked into the next room where her friends were just astonished to see her recovered. And later, she wrote that she was ever after in better health than she'd had before.
Which is essentially the kind of healing one reads about in the Bible. And one wonders, how does that work?
Yes, exactly. So after this experience, she devoted herself to the study of the Bible and felt that the answers that she sought were there. And, of course, she just continued to love and appreciate the ministry of Christ Jesus. She studied the Bible from Genesis right through Revelation. And ultimately, to make a long story short, she began to heal others through an understanding of what she was gaining through her study of the Bible. And what she felt that she was discovering through this study were actual laws of God. She wrote in Science and Health that she knew that healing in the Bible was accomplished through holy, uplifting faith. But she wanted to know the science of this healing. And there's that word again, the science. And so she began healing others through what she was learning about God as love, what she was learning about God as the very principle, the law of the universe, about God as cause and effect, and God as all good. That was another thing that she was learning through her study, the goodness and the allness of
so
God.
In doing this healing and in quantifying this, the science of this spiritual healing, the science of faith, and as approaching it as a science, as something to be questioned and researched and published, which is all of which she did, mm-hmm. and that then became Christian Science.
Indeed, it did. After she had had that healing of the fall on the ice, she really devoted herself to deep study for the next 9 years and application of what she was studying, what she was learning by, as I said, healing others, healing people of everything from skin rashes and infected fingers to life-threatening cases
And that's
heart
what
disease.
We're going to pick up when we come back from this break.
Okay.
Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, today we're talking about what's eating what. And what's eating us right now, of course, is the coronavirus pandemic, the contagion that's eating us all up, all across the world. Is there a way that we can avoid that contagion? Well, there might be, and that's what we're discussing today. So pull up your radio and tune in. We'll be right back.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
With Michael Olson, Mary Alice Rose, who is a meteorologist and a lecturer. Now, you're quite a scientist in your own right, but from the practical sciences of earth sciences, tell us a little bit about your journey through the sciences, because I'm really curious about how you can hold on to a Christian science and still be a scientist in an era when the two don't seem to be able to mix very well. How did you do that?
Well, it's kind of an interesting story. As I indicated earlier, I was raised in Christian Science, and then when I started studying the scientific method in school, it all resonated with me because of this whole idea of logical thinking. And yes, Christian Science is about faith, it's about God, it's about prayer, but there is a wonderful logic to it that has always spoken to me. And so when I started studying physical science in public school, that resonated with me kind of on a similar level. And so when I went to college, I decided to major in meteorology. So I have a degree in meteorology, and then I got a second degree in computer science. And, of course, computer science is all about logic and reasoning, and it just seemed like such a perfect fit. So I spent 20 years after college working in different areas of Earth science, in weather, in oceanography, in astronomy, and I was supporting, as a software developer, I was supporting research in these different areas of Earth science. For 11 of those years, I was working as a manager in the development and maintenance of the ground system operational software for the Hubble Space Telescope. Very interesting job.
So you were totally a scientist, a practical scientist, a scientist of pluses and minuses.
Right.
Of the concrete objective reality of yes or no. And yet you were able to hold on to your faith. And after your active career as a scientist, you became a Christian Science lecturer.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I first became a Christian Science practitioner, which is someone who is devoted full-time to helping others through prayer, and much the way Mary Baker Eddy did when she was learning how to heal herself. And I would say that being a practitioner is my first job right now. I'm also an authorized teacher of Christian Science, and in addition, I am a public lecturer. I'm on the Christian Science Board of Lectureship.
Okay, good. Now, when I opened this program, I opened it with my little analogy of weather, too cold. But did that ring true to you? That notion that Merritt Chamberlain says, no, cold is when your spit freezes before it hits the ground. So all the rest of us were shivering in our boots, and it didn't seem to faze him in the least bit. And I used to lay in a bathtub of hot water trying to thaw out, and I kept wondering, why wasn't he cold? Why was it he impervious to that? So obviously, it had something to do with the mind.
Well, yes, and your story definitely did resonate with me. One of the stories that you heard in the lecture that I gave recently out in Soquel was about my overcoming the fear of severe weather. And I don't know how much of that story you would like for me to tell. I could tell the whole thing.
Very briefly, a tornado almost blew you away.
Well, yes, more than once. I lived for 17 years in the state of Oklahoma, and I moved there when I was 11 years old. And at that time, I was very afraid of severe weather. I mean, paralyzingly afraid. And it was my study of Christian Science that enabled me to overcome that fear. And if I could just summarize what it was that enabled me to rise above the fear, it was going from feeling that there was this thing that was so much bigger than me. Who can control the weather, right? It was my feeling that way, to recognizing that in reality, God is the only power of the universe, and the God that I was understanding was a God of love, a God of peace, that rather than all the evil in the world being caused by God, instead I came to realize more and more that evil simply comes from an ignorance of God. And that's a profound idea, and it certainly was profound to me. And as I came to understand more about that idea, I realized that I had not recognized that God was there for me to lean on in these moments of fear. And so, as I came to understand better God as love, God as ever-present, and God as omnipotence, the power of love, with a capital L, meaning God, that just helped to calm my fear so much. There was one time, if you don't mind my telling this little bit of the story.
Really quickly.
Okay. As you indicated, there was a tornado bearing down on the town. And in that moment, I just declared audibly and in my thought, God is love. I just stated a simple biblical truth that comes right out of the Bible in 1 John. And it was so calming to me. And almost immediately, the storm just quieted and the whole thing was done. And I didn't see it as a coincidence. Rather, I felt it was God blessing me in a way that I could understand. And not just blessing me, but blessing the whole community.
And here we are with what we perceive to be evil. The evil of some people who hunted down a virus in bats and transformed them into a virus that would infect people around the world. And now we are in the midst of this contagion. Mary Baker Eddy wrote 4 paragraphs about that contagion, and I'd like to go through them with you, if I might, Mary Alice. And
okay.
I'll just read one paragraph, and we'll go from there.
Okay.
This from Mary Baker Eddy, Contagion. Whatever man sees, feels, or in any way is cognizant of must be caught through mind, insomuch as perception, sensation, and consciousness belong to mind and not to matter. Floating with the popular current of mortal thought without questioning the reliability of its conclusions, we do what others do, believe what others believe, and say what others say. Common consent is contagious, and it makes disease catching. Wow.
Yeah.
Insomuch as perception, sensation, and consciousness belong to mind and not to matter. It's in our mind.
It's a radical statement, isn't it? But Mrs. Eddy did not make that statement just lightly. You know, she made it after years of working with this idea of God as all, and one of the synonyms that she used for God was mind, with a capital M, and God is also spirit, as Jesus said. So the source of our being is spirit, not matter. So this understanding, this paragraph, requires one to recognize that causation is mind or God.
And
is all good.
And if we float with the popular current of mortal thought,
mm-hmm.
We're stuck.
Yeah.
We're stuck believing. And the consent, the common consent, is contagious, and it makes disease catching. And there we are.
You know, one of the ways that we might describe common consent is sort of mob mentality, even fear mongering, and
oh my goodness, you know, it's television right now. If you watch television, all you see is coronavirus is going to eat us up.
And the din of social media. And I would like to pause here and say that I am not in any way suggesting that we should ignore what the human condition, and I applaud the efforts of everybody, the medical community, the government, you know, of all of the effort, the honest, earnest, sincere effort that is going on to address this. I think what my perspective is simply, can we step back and think about it from a fresh perspective and find a way to rise above the fear?
But only if we see it differently.
Yes. Right. Yes. That's okay. What we're really talking about, is gaining a fresh perspective from a material point of view, a physical causation, to a spiritual point of view, where mind is what we have to address, the human mind and divine mind.
Okay, moving on to paragraph number 2. People believe in infectious and contagious diseases, and that anyone is liable to have them under certain predisposing or exciting causes. This mental state prepares one to have any disease whenever there appear to be the circumstances which he believes produce it. If he believed as sincerely that health is catching when exposed to contact with healthy people, he would catch their state of feeling quite as surely and with better effect than he does the sick man's. Now there's a transition for you.
Yes, it's true. And this actually reminds me of another experience I had, and I think I can tell it pretty quickly.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
When I was in high school, I was dating a guy, and we both came down with strep throat. I know this because it was diagnosed by a doctor. And the doctor basically said, well, you're giving it back and forth to one another, so stay away from each other. And that was his first thing. And so we did that. And but the doctor also said words to the effect that if you don't have your tonsils removed, you're going to have a problem with this kind of for the rest of your life. So I did not choose to have my tonsils removed, and I don't know what happened with my boyfriend after that because we broke up. But over the coming years, throughout high school and into college, every winter I suffered from one or more bouts of strep throat. Every time I prayed about it, as I was taught in Christian Science, every time I found health through doing that, but it was this recurring nature, and it's just what this paragraph says. And I believed that I was in the circumstances that caused this thing, and even though I was praying about it as best I knew, it was still recurring.
You still believed in it.
Exactly. So one time, when I was in college, I was suffering from one of these bouts, and again, just to be brief, I read something that spoke to me so deeply about the law of God. Let me see if I can find where that was. It says, if a man were in prison, there is a law of God which is applicable to his condition and which, if properly applied, would procure his release. If a man were drowning in mid-ocean with apparently no human help at hand, there is a law of God which, when rightly appealed to, would bring about his rescue. That's from an article that was written in a Christian Science magazine. But I'll just say that it spoke to me so deeply that I just suddenly was profoundly grateful for everything I had learned about God through my study of the Bible. And I was just in tears of gratitude as I realized that there was a law of God that could release me from this prison of illness. It was just so profoundly glorious to me, and I felt the love of God surrounding me just so deeply. It was just really a transformative moment in my life, and I think here is where it's appropriate. You were talking before about your state of thought. Well, this is where I felt that God's love for me was transforming my thinking, and it healed me. I was within the hour. I was eating normally. The next day I went back to school. And best of all, I never had strep throat again. So it was a wonderful transformation.
Now, we're locked in thought right now. We're, mm-hmm. we're focused on this evil that is set loose in the world, this contagion. And what does it say? If we believe in infectious and contagious diseases, we're there. We believe it. But if we believed as sincerely that health is catching when exposed to contact with healthy people, if somehow we could swap how we're swap out how we're thinking from believing that we are going to be vulnerable to this contagion to believing that, well, maybe we should look to somebody that's healthy. It's kind of like starting to listen to Merritt Chamberlain when he says, no, 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 it's not cold. Cold right. is when your spit freezes before it hits the ground. And if you change your thinking, then maybe it won't be so cold. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. And what's eating us today, of course, is the contagion of the Made in China coronavirus. But we're finding a way that we can avoid it. Perhaps if we change how we're thinking, not so easy to do if you believe in the contagion. We are with Mary Alice Rose, meteorologist and Christian Science lecturer. And you stay tuned right back.
So much to say, so little time to say it on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, quick question before we go to Mary Baker Eddy's paragraph number 3, which is where things really get interesting. How the heck did you manage to hold on to your science in college, where it seems like anything that has anything to do with the Christian faith is public enemy number one these days?
You mean how did I hold on to Christian science?
Yes.
In college?
Yes.
Well, I guess I had always seen the benefit of prayer, the benefit of recognizing my relationship to God. When people ask me about my work on the Hubble Space Telescope, and in fact, I had somebody ask me not long ago, what do you feel was the most important aspect of the success of that mission, which is still ongoing, I might add. The Hubble is still orbiting the Earth. I answered that I felt that the greatest success of that project was the way that everybody worked together, all of the millions of decisions that had to be made and executed in agreements and that had to be made in order for the work to be accomplished. And when you think about what Christianity is, when you think about what Jesus preached, it wasn't just about healing people. In fact, in Mary Baker Eddy's view, the healing was not really the primary thing about Jesus' mission. It was what he taught, and the healing was a signal to the divine nature, because people couldn't explain the healing in any way except that it was of God.
So in that divine nature, that divine mind, is what melded together all of those decisions that
yes.
put together the Hubble telescope.
Well, and I'll just say for myself that I relied every day very heavily on my faith, even though I never talked about it really in the workplace, except on the odd occasion. But you know, that wasn't why I was there. I just relied on my relationship with God and understanding of what it meant to me to be a Christian, about practicing the Golden Rule, about following the Ten Commandments, and in Christ Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, just that Christianity aspect of working with others, loving others, appreciating others. And frankly, that brings me to another point that I think is worth mentioning regarding the pandemic. And that is, it is not lost on me that the words viral and virus and virulent all come from the same root. And I don't have it right in front of me, but virulent, it has to do with malicious intent. And what better response, what better anecdote or antidote to that sort of malicious intent than love?
Well, that is the perfect segue to Mary Baker Eddy's third paragraph on contagion. And here it comes. If only the people would believe that good is more contagious than evil, since God is omnipresence, how much more certain would be the doctor's success and the clergyman's conversion of sinners. And if only the pulpit would encourage faith in God in this direction, and faith in mind over all other influence governing the receptivity of the body, theology would teach man as David taught. Because thou hast made the Lord, which is my refuge, even the Most High, thy habitation, there shall no evil befall thee, neither shall any plague come nigh thy dwelling. Whoa. It's just exactly what you said. All of those minds coming together. If only people would believe that good is more contagious than evil.
And I love how Mrs. Eddy mentions the doctor's success in this paragraph, acknowledging the good that everybody is trying to do here, acknowledging that effort. No, I completely agree. And that last statement that you read, the last part, she says, as David taught, David...
King David.
Exactly, who wrote many of the Psalms, and right. The Book of Psalms. Because thou hast made the Lord, which is my refuge, even the Most High, thy habitation, there shall no evil befall thee, neither shall any plague come nigh thy dwelling. One of the things I've learned in Christian Science is that it doesn't matter what the picture is that's presented to me by the world. I can always lift my thought to God. You know, when I read these words, I don't think of it as just hopeful sentiment. You know, any promise of good in the Bible to me is divine law. It's a law that can't be broken. So when I think about what the 91st Psalm says, and that's from Psalm 91, 91st Psalm is a beautiful, beautiful prayer that I hope all of your readers will read, all of your listeners will read today after they hear this. Psalm 91, the whole thing is just such a promise of God's presence and God's power. I've said before in other venues, and I'll say again here, that regardless of whatever other methods may be employed by individuals and governments, I find that the most important preventive measure in eliminating contagion is simply that understanding of the ever-presence and the omnipotence of divine love.
Which is exactly the opposite of earthly evil.
Exactly.
Right down
exactly.
To it. Yeah, the viral evil. Okay, paragraph number 4. The confidence of mankind in contagious disease would thus become beautifully less, and in the same proportion would faith in the power of God to heal and to save mankind increase, until the whole human race would become healthier, holier, happier, and longer lived. A calm Christian state of mind is a better preventative of contagion than a drug or any other kind of possible sanative method. And the perfect love that casteth out fear is a sure defense. The paragraph opens with that belief, the confidence of mankind in contagious diseases.
Yes. I once read an article that pointed out that we all have confidence in something. You know, that the article is about how do we gain greater confidence in healing and in bettering the world. And the author was pointing out, well, we all already have confidence. We either have confidence in good or we have confidence in evil. And it really was a wake-up call to me. What am I placing my confidence in?
Well, what do you believe in? Which mind are you tuned into?
Right. Am I tuned into?
Which God are you saying prayers to?
Yes, precisely. That's it. And I think it's worth pointing out here that at some place in Mrs. Eddy's writings, she points or she quotes this citation from 1 John that perfect love casts out fear. She quotes it here, of course, but she quotes it elsewhere. And when she quotes it, she has love with a capital L, meaning God. So perfect love casts out fear. That's God is the healer. It is a transformation of our thinking that brings healing, but it is not simply the activity of the human mind. It's a transformation of thought by divine mind, by what I think of as the Christ consciousness. You know, Jesus taught this Christ spirit, this sense of the power and presence of God to heal, and this same Christ spirit is here today. I mean, Jesus is not here personally, but that same Christ, that message from God to the human consciousness, uplifting humanity, healing and redeeming us, that same Christ is here today. So it's not us thinking up to God, if you will. I like to think of it as God thinking out from God, you know, not that I am God, but that I do have that same access to God that Christ Jesus had.
And, you know, when reading the New Testament stories of Jesus healing, you always get the sense that he was showing people, yeah, it's easy. Look, watch, poof, it's done. And people would go, well, what kind of magic did you do there? I don't understand it. But what Jesus, I think, was really trying to say is that it's here.
Yes.
It's here.
I completely agree.
It's available. It's easy. You just have to believe.
And really, Mary Baker Eddy's life work was explaining the how of what Jesus did. She revered Christ Jesus just utterly, and was so deeply grateful for his mission. And she also saw that he was, she called him, in fact, the great exemplar, you know, our example to follow what he did through these laws of God that he illustrated, he demonstrated, he taught through parables, through his healing work. And it's just been a wonderful joy to me throughout my entire life that I have had some glimpse through Christian Science of the how of Jesus' healing through this divine
principle. Because Mary Baker Eddy laid it down as a science.
Exactly. And I do want to clarify that or affirm that Mrs. Eddy never felt that she had invented something in Christian Science, rather that she discovered something that had always been. She discovered the science behind the teachings and the mission of Christ Jesus.
Which, of course, is what we're all looking for.
Right.
So Mary Alice Rose, scientist and Christian Scientist, couple of tough questions, if I may.
Okay.
Do you believe we can avoid the contagion of the made in China coronavirus?
I do.
Wow.
And it's very much individual thinking, individual prayer, and collective prayer that will make the difference for humanity. And I mean that very seriously, and I take my responsibility in that very seriously. I lectured in South Africa and Zimbabwe a few years back, and I was there in my ministry as a Christian Science practitioner and lecturer. And everywhere I went, I traveled around both countries, and everywhere I went, I was screened for Ebola. And I was warned about yellow fever and malaria. And I knew before I went that there were warnings about that, you know, traveling there. But I felt, and I did pray about the wisdom of my going, but it certainly there was free travel in and out of those countries. It was not restricted like it is now. And so I did go, and I armed myself with prayer. I lived with the 91st Psalm that I was talking about before. God is my refuge and my fortress, and in God will I trust. Now, if there are ever, you know, requirements, legal requirements for vaccination or something like that, I certainly want to comply with that. I would comply with any quarantines or reporting of contagious disease. I mean, those are just things one does as a good citizen. And I think it's practicing the golden rule as well. Even though I was not vaccinated when I was growing up as a Christian Scientist, some of my Christian Science friends were. You know, it was a complete choice on their part. But I do believe, as a Christian Scientist, in vaccination from a different perspective, and that is from the perspective of prayer. But as I said, if it's a legal requirement, I am going to comply. It's just simply right to do that. But anyway, I was able to travel around those countries unafraid, and I've been able to travel around the U.S. unafraid. Up until a few weeks ago, I was still traveling and lecturing until it just wasn't really possible to do that anymore. And I've prayed about it every day to know that I was, as the 91st Psalm says, that I was in the secret place of the Most High. And I would also like to just point out that this prayer is not just for me. I am constantly praying the same prayer for the world, to know that we don't have to be afraid, that divine love, that God is blessing everyone right now, blessing those on the front line, blessing those people that are working in the grocery store, and blessing the doctors and the nurses that are doing their best to help in the way that they know how.
And 91st Psalm, Mary Alice Rose, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for all out there bringing us a little hope today that we can withstand and avoid the contagion that's eating up the world. Thank you so much, Mary Alice Rose.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends miss the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.